Mike Florio with us. Mike, has anybody tried to pretend to be you yet with this new process? Has that happened?
Not yet, but I figure it's just a matter of time, and I can't wait. I can't wait. I don't know what's going on. What's he trying to do? Did he pay $44 billion to kill the thing? Is that what he's doing? I feel like the guy has no clue how to run this platform. Why the hell did he buy it?
What advice would you give Elon to make Twitter better, Mike?
Well, it sure as hell wouldn't be let anyone who wants to pay $8 a month have a blue check. That doesn't make someone real. That doesn't make someone legitimate. That just is, you know, a pittance for somebody who wants to create chaos. Hell, at a certain point in my life, I would have happily paid the $8, and I would have set up a fake account just to have some fun. I can't fault the people who are doing it.
When would that have been in Mike Florio's life? Take us inside the existence of Mike Florio. Give me an age and time where Mike Florio would have thought of that as a good idea. Where would you have been at that point, Mike?
54. 2 years ago. Listen,
Pony.
When I was in college, I went to Carnegie Mellon, and I did anything but study. That's definitely the age where I would have exerted $8 a month and plenty of mental energy if it meant not studying. Absolutely.
I think the problem, Mike, with all this is that he paid like $44 billion and he didn't have $44 billion, so now he's trying to make a site that's basically never been profitable, and he's doing it in a very bad way. But, Pony, now that I'm on that subject for a second,
yes,
how have you not created a Mike Tomlin account, paid for it to be verified, and then started just tweeting absurdities from it? How has that not happened yet for you?
Because social media to me is... I find Twitter to be fun, but I'm also not going to invest so much time in it where it leads to more stress and frustration and craziness in my life. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on those things. This is just one thing that I have to do for work, and I'm not going to go out of my way to create more foolishness. Mike, how about the situation with the Steelers getting pulled off Sunday Night Football? What can you tell us about that? I don't think that's ever happened before where the Steelers are told, you're not good enough for prime time. You guys stink. We don't want to subject America to watch you guys for 3 hours on a Sunday night.
One of the lessons that I have learned in 13 years with NBC is, among others, I don't know a damn thing about why the NFL chooses to do or not do whatever it does when it's time to flex. That's the NFL's business. It's not NBC's business. It's definitely not my business. I just keep my mouth shut.
Oh, NBC doesn't pick? That's an NFL thing? I didn't know that.
Well, the NFL makes the decision. Now, all networks lobby all the time. And there's lobbying that goes on to move games from 1 o'clock to 4:25. That happens throughout the course of the season as we get later into the year. The only thing that's locked in stone is Monday Night Football and Thursday Night Football. And I think at some point there's a flex option late in the season for Monday Night Football coming up. So the NFL makes the decision. But yeah, if NBC has a game that thinks it's going to wreck its ratings, then NBC is going to maybe make some suggestions.
Gotcha.
But those are things that happen at a far higher level than I occupy. And look, the Steelers aren't good this year. And now, could the Cowboys withstand that? Probably. And the Cowboys have a game against the Colts coming up later this year. And, you know, where the Colts are right now, that's something you would say, well, hell, they don't want them on national TV if this thing ends up being what we think it's going to be. But it's against the Cowboys. How do you give up a Cowboys game?
What you think the Colts is going to be is an open tank job, right? That they say isn't a tank job, but that's what Jim Irsay is doing?
I don't think it's a tank job. I think Jim Irsay earnestly believes that this is going to somehow turn the thing around. If he was going to tank, he would do something different. This is Jim Irsay tapping into the glory days as he desperately tries to make the franchise into something that it currently is not. And I was thinking about all the crazy things that happen during a football season, and there are plenty of things that happen that are nuts. I mean, last year, the John Gruden thing. Mm-hmm. Who would have ever seen that coming? But that wasn't created by the Raiders. This is the craziest in-season thing that I can remember that was created by the team. Maybe since the Browns announced they were moving to Baltimore in November of 1995, that may be the only other thing. And that was before I was in the business. But that was like, that's really crazy to do in the middle of a season. This thing with the Colts is nuts, and it's happening during the middle of the season. I really do believe Jim Irsay thinks that this is going to turn it around. He thinks they're going to finish 9-7-1, or if they do finish 9-7-1, they'll get in the playoffs. Now they got to go 6-2. I don't think they're going to go 6-2. And I said today on PFT, if they go 6-2, I'll make a $10,000 donation to the charity of Jim Irsay's choice. And I don't think I'm going to be making that donation because they ain't going to go 6-2.
Mike, do you think that Brian Flores, we've forgotten sometimes as he's been a defensive assistant here that he still has an ongoing lawsuit against the NFL. Did this strengthen his lawsuit? Does a Steelers assistant coach have a better argument now that a former player with no experience became a head coach this week?
Yes. Yes. Because it's just another example of someone who has no real qualifications or credentials getting an opportunity who isn't a minority. And you think back over the last 20 years, there have been occasions where people get opportunities in the NFL without the objective credentials or qualifications. I'll go back to Matt Millen. He was handed the keys to the Detroit Lions and had no business being handed the keys to the Detroit Lions. Hadn't been working for a team as a scout. Hadn't been paying the dues. Hadn't been learning the job. They put him in charge of the team. They put John Elway in charge of the Broncos when he did not have the qualifications to run a team. Oh, he won a Super Bowl. Yeah, because he was able to get Peyton Manning. It all fell apart once Peyton Manning left. And regardless, Elway lacked the credentials and the qualifications to be a GM. Great quarterback, that doesn't mean you're going to walk through the door as a great GM. John Lynch walking through the door as a GM. Now, Kyle Shanahan calls the shots, but still. Jack Easterby, the guy who was fired by the Texans a few weeks back, he never should have been a VP of football operations. And the Texans would have hired, but for the Flores lawsuit, the Texans would have hired Josh McCown to be their head coach this year. I am convinced of that. The Flores lawsuit short-circuited their plan to hire Josh McCown, who would have been exactly what Jeff Saturday is instead. The first player without any college or pro coaching experience to become a head coach since the Vikings made Norm Van Brocklin their first coach in franchise history 1 year after he was the NFL's MVP as quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mike, doesn't it, to play devil's advocate a little bit, because I've seen this floated out there, and it was actually sort of my first thought on the whole idea of, like, the way Irsay's gone about this. Wouldn't an interim coach job be, like, a horrible situation for a minority hiring candidate? Because then it would just say, well, you've got this interim tag slapped on you, and then you can go back into the process. Like, I would think you wouldn't want to put somebody in that position, because then the owner has a lot of outs to say, well, hold on a second. You know, maybe you didn't do too well as my interim head coach, or maybe you just only did okay and I want to see what's out there.
Well, if you're going to go beyond the staff, that's what makes it different. If you're Steve Wilks on the Panthers staff and they fire Matt Rhule and they say, hey, do you want to be the interim coach? I mean, he could have said no. Now, do you turn down the opportunity to show what you can do and hope that others understand that you're kind of operating with one hand tied behind your back? But when you're talking about going outside the building, I think that there should be a requirement to have a Rooney Rule compliant search. Otherwise, just pick one of the guys who are there. Why not John Fox, who took multiple teams to the Super Bowl? Why not Gus Bradley, who's a former NFL head coach? Why don't you just elevate somebody you already have? And if you're going to go outside the building, why are you making a beeline for a guy that has no qualifications? A guy who he coached high school for 3 years and he went 20-16. Are you kidding me? And I'm not anti-Jeff Saturday. Look, he could be the next Vince Lombardi. But I can't fault him for taking the job because opportunity knocks and he answered the door. We all would do something like that. We all think we're more talented than we really are. We all think we can do a job bigger than the one we hold, and we're all going to be tempted to say yes to the opportunity to show that we can do it. And maybe we will. We're at least going to say yes to the opportunity. He made it worse, though, by twice turning down opportunities to become a member of the staff. They tried to hire him 3 years ago to be the offensive line coach. He said no. They tried to hire him earlier this year. He said no. If he was already on the staff, this pill goes down a lot easier. And to the extent that Jim Irsay is trying to recapture the glory days, they got Reggie Wayne on the staff.
Yep.
They got one of the other players on the staff. And if they had made Reggie Wayne the interim head coach, the outcry would not have been what it is, because the guy is in the building. He was on the team in the past, and he's been on the staff. He's been around. He's at least been a coach in the NFL.
Mike, your reaction to what happened here yesterday, the way Mike Tomlin talked about Najee Harris and the ascension of Jaylen Warren, the undrafted free agent running back.
Well, you know, I saw your tweet yesterday where you suggested there's a chance Najee Harris gets benched. I started poking around in response to seeing that last night. Warren's getting more reps and more touches. And I think Tomlin essentially said that yesterday. He didn't come right out and say it, but they're going to give the ball to Warren more, which necessarily means they're going to give the ball to Najee Harris less, unless they just stop throwing the ball altogether and just run Harris and run Warren. But Warren has impressed them. He hits the hole and he gains the yards. There's a little too much dancing that's going on. And this may just be a way to fire a shot across the bow for Najee Harris to get him to do what they want him to do. And the fact that they're 2-6 and they're trying to win, they're not going to tank. They're never going to tank in Pittsburgh. You know, tanking is a very attractive business strategy because it gives you a high draft pick. Tanking is a horrible way of running a football operation because it introduces into the mix the concept that anything other than winning can be tolerated. And unless you're going to press the reset button and fire everybody after the season, and obviously the Steelers aren't going to do that, you don't tank. You're trying to win under tough circumstances, because even if it doesn't work, it reinforces the idea that we are about winning and winning and winning. And they're going to be watching all these guys now, and they're going to be willing to make changes, in-house changes with players, if the guy who's currently on the bench or the guy who's currently not getting as many reps, if they believe that that guy can help them win more football games.
Mike, we had Andrew Whitworth say today that back in his glory days as a high school football player, he once ate 8 Wendy's double cheeseburgers in one sitting. Do you think you could have done something like that when you were at CMU?
Hell no. And, you know, the days in my life of not having much money consisted of what I hated, the all-you-can-eat buffet. Because, you know, it's like, this is a great opportunity to go be a complete and total glutton. And it was always impossible to find the sweet spot between getting your money's worth for whatever it costs to have the all-you-can-eat whatever, but then not feeling completely and totally disgusting and full and unable to function for the next 12 hours. And I hated that. But I always felt compelled to do it because back in the days of having no money, this is great. I mean, this is enough caloric, you know, intake to carry me through to the end of the week. So let's go give this a try. But I can't.
Wait, what were you trying to do? Like, Mike, were you trying to eat like a hibernating bear or like a crocodile? Like,
yes, for $3.99, yes. I mean, look, man, times were tough. I wasn't poor, but I just, you know, every dollar counted. So anytime there was an all-you-can-eat buffet, it was time to go do it. And I always hated that feeling of walking out of there that I didn't get my money's worth. And I really hated the feeling of walking out of there thinking I was going to explode like the guy in the old Monty Python movie who has the one last mint that's wafer thin and just explodes from the inside out.
Mike Florio, our NFL insider, Pro Football Talk, Football Night in America. Thank you, Mike.
See you guys.